Now, hopefully on the line, if I've got my buttons right this time, we have from the Motutapu Restoration Trust, Trustee Bridget Winstone. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, that's excellent. Good morning and welcome to Waiheke Radio, Bridget.
Thank you for inviting me.
Oh, listen, thank you for giving up some of your Saturday morning time, which for almost everybody is terribly important. So thank you for coming on air and as part of our ongoing special on the islands around the island. Motutapu, of course, is on the port side as we head out to Matiatia as Waiheke residents, and we go past it so many times. It occurred to me this week that we really should know a little bit more about it. Now, it's a 1,500 hectare island. It's huge compared to some of the islands in the Gulf. Its base is hard rock. I got all this from your wonderful website. 180 million years old, while its neighbor Rangitoto was born by volcanic eruption just 600 years ago. But where you guys come in, the Motutapu project started in 1993, and the island was declared mammalian pest-free in 2011. That must have been such a moment for you guys.
It was a momentous occasion.
Yeah.
It's amazing to think that we've got this 3,800 hectare pest-free habitat, half an hour ferry ride from downtown Auckland.
Yeah, unbelievable. Mammalian free since 2011, although possums and wallabies were actually gone by the 90s. What were wallabies doing on Motutapu, Bridget?
Oh, that's an interesting question. In the days with Sir George Grey was around and various other people, they liked to have exotic animals on their islands.
Yeah.
The Kowal was one, and they would have been introduced at that time, along with emu and other exotic things.
I guess that was that mad colonial thing, wasn't it, of exoticising everything everywhere on the planet.
Exactly. Yeah. So, but anyway, they're all gone now. So
yeah,
that's good.
That's fantastic. And then ultimately, in around 2011, it must have been rats that were the final buggers to go with it.
We had 8 more species of animal pest, 3 different kinds of rat: ship rat, Norway rat, and Kiori rat.
Yeah.
Mice. Hedgehogs.
Yeah.
Rabbits.
How did hedgehogs get out there? I suppose people took them.
I don't know how they got there,
yeah,
but they were there all right. And wild cats. So it was a very complicated pest eradication.
Yeah.
But because the Department of Conservation lead the world in this kind of thing, they did a magnificent job of removing every mouse, every rat, and every hedgehog and so on from both Rangitoto and Motutapu, because they're joined by a causeway. So if you what you do on one, you have to do on the other.
Yeah, I guess that's right, because at low tide, is it actually dry between the two islands? I mean, we should know this. I haven't been around that side of Rangitoto for a long time.
Yes, you can drive. There's a causeway and a bridge connecting the two islands.
Oh, okay. I remember when I was a kid, it was just a walk through, I thought, sort of ankle-deep water.
Yeah, I think that bridge has been there a long time.
Okay, that's...
I think it was put in during World War II.
Oh, wow. Now, speaking of the wars, and we'll come back to the restoration in ecological terms in a second, but one of the things about Motutapu that I'm rediscovering is it's a sort of incredible history in a military sense as well.
Yes, it was the centre of Auckland's coastal defence system during World War II. So we had 3 6-inch gun emplacements on the island, as opposed to, I think they were 9-inch on Waiheke. They were state-of-the-art, and fortunately they were never fired in anger, but certainly they were part of Auckland's coastal defence system.
Yeah, and quite significant. We have our own Stony Batter, but even more significant on Motutapu, wasn't it?
Well, there was a lot more infrastructure
there.
Soldiers stationed there, the army barracks, now part of the outdoor education camp. I'm more interested in the tree planting.
Yeah, well, actually, that's what I want to come back to now, Bridget. You guys have been amazing. Volunteers have now planted more than 100 hectares with 450,000 plus native trees, and it is now a forest that is almost canopy level. And again, I got this off your website. But what I wanted to ask you is, People going past on the ferry to Waiheke probably don't see all that replanting, do they? Perhaps the way that if they look to the starboard side at Motuhee, you can see the growth. But is it that Motutapu is so large that even that significant planting isn't everywhere?
That you're dead right. It is quite hard to see it from the sea. Probably the best place is as you go past Home Bay. There's a valley that goes back inland, and there's quite a lot of forest there, but it's a pity it's not so visible from the sea. But we've been trying to plant a catchment.
Yeah.
And so you've got to do all the valleys, and they do disappear inland.
Yeah, absolutely. But also, one of the really interesting things for me about Motutapu is the coexistence of the farm and the restoration programs. And this is not in conflict, although a lot of people might think farming isn't ecologically friendly. This is, in fact, am I right, it's the world's only pest-free farm.
Yes, well, the farm lessee likes to claim that. I guess he's probably right.
Yeah.
That's quite interesting.
But the farmer who has the lease on Motutapu is on your trust, is that right?
That's right.
Yeah, so the trust and the farm are working together for ecological purposes, and it was very enlightening for me to see the positive side of farming on the island, because, of course, in terms of the spread of invasive weeds and stuff, farming and grazing is actually quite good.
Well, yes, if we didn't graze that island, it would be one weedy nightmare.
Yeah.
Because it sits right next door to one of the world's weediest cities. So, and Waiheke knows all. Waihekeans know all about weeds.
We certainly do. When it existed, the ARC staff used to quietly call us Weed Hecky. But having said that, we have weed busters on the island. We have a whole lot of local initiatives. We're very clear around our obligations over moth plant and woolly nightshade and all those sorts of things. But I guess an inhabited island like Waiheke is a little bit of a risk, is it, in terms of evergreen buckthorn and, that's that rhamnus thing that flowers yellow every winter, and moth plant, woolly nightshade, pampas and smilax and all that stuff. Are we reinfecting islands around us from Waiheke?
I suspect there's a two-way flow.
Right, okay. That's very nicely put. Very diplomatic. Thank you very much. With this incredible success story of 100 hectares, 450,000 native trees, let's talk about the endemic species that are beginning to thrive as part of this pest-free habitat. The island's now a safe home for a small breeding population of translocated kiwi.
That's right. Yep, we're part of the restoration of the Coromandel brown kiwi. So what happens is the eggs are taken out of the forest on the Coromandel. Volunteers drive them to Rotorua, to Rainbow Springs, or to the zoo in Auckland, and they are hatched in incubators. Then when they're about a month old, they are released onto Motutapu. And hopefully in the fullness of time, when we reach capacity, then some of the mature birds will be able to go back to the Coromandel.
As the more I look into the islands around the island in this special series I'm doing on Waihi Radio, the more I discover that, in fact, Tiri Tiri Matangi was an early example of what might be achieved on a lot of our islands. And I'm talking about the Inner Gulf. I'm talking about the Inner Gulf and how possibly Tiri Matangi is a great example of what we could end up with on all sorts of islands in the Inner Gulf.
Exactly. Well, Tiri, there were sceptics when they first suggested using volunteers from the community to plant a native forest and get rid of animal pests, bring back endangered species.
Yeah.
In actual fact, it was a roaring success and is now an international model for conservation, and certainly has been the inspiration for a lot of conservation projects around New Zealand that are community-based, and certainly that was where the idea came from Motutapu.
It was led in the early days by former National Party Member of Parliament and former Auckland Mayor Chris Fletcher. She's still on the trust, I see.
Yes, she's still on the trust.
But she was an inspiring voice in the early days.
She was, yes.
Yeah.
Along with Sir Rob Finnick.
Oh, of course, and of course, a well-known person on Waiheke, of course, whose own conservation work at the eastern end of Waiheke is quite extraordinary. Yeah, so we have our own sort of predator-free ambitions, and I've asked this of other trusts too. We have our own predator-free ambitions on Waiheke. Are you hopeful that we'll get there?
I'm very hopeful. There's going to be a lot of hard work, but. You know, where there's a will, there's a way.
Yeah, exactly. And there's a strong will on Waiheke, I think.
Well, that's really great news because once the island is pest-free, everybody will notice a change in the bird life. Mm. I believe that kaka have already found their way to Waiheke.
Yep, I've already managed to have two interviews about kaka in the last couple of months.
Right, well... We are dying for them to breed on Motutapu. They haven't, to our knowledge, they haven't started yet, but we hope that they will. So on Waiheke, you will notice an increase in bird life. For instance, fantails, tuis, kereru, kingfishers, some of your more common native bird species, but also, in the fullness of time, you may well get bellbirds coming across. They found Motutapu and also the little green parrot, Kakariki. They also found Motutapu. And now we hear and see Kakariki and bellbirds all over the island.
Oh, that's absolutely wonderful. That is absolutely wonderful. I didn't realise there were Kakariki there. I've just been to Stewart Island recently and Ulver Island. And the bird life there, I mean, Ulver Island's been a bird sanctuary since 1899, I believe. And so obviously the bird life there is just extraordinary. It was so inspiring for me to walk through a forest that was at least close to the original Podocarp. Oh, well, I don't know if it's Podocarp down there, but that original forest environment of Aotearoa New Zealand, and to have even some taste of that in the Inner Gulf would just be inspiring for everybody. One very practical question, if you wouldn't mind, Bridget, I just would like to clear up something that there's been a little bit of discussion about among Waiheke folk, which is what happened to that very large row of probably horrible old pine trees that are right on the cliff, and they all appear dead on the southern side of Motutapu. We go past them on the ferry all the time, and I've heard conflicting stories. They've been poisoned, they blah blah blah. Frankly, they're just pine trees, but can you tell us what happened?
Well, that's a very good question. A few years ago there was a troubleshooter, Nick Singers, who came up to have a look at some of the weed problems.
Oh yeah.
And he suggested that there are big problems of pine trees seeding on Rangitoto. Rangitoto is a gem. It's the world's largest Pūtikawa forest.
Indeed.
And if we left the pine trees that seed there, it would eventually become a pine forest, which is not not what we want. And so Nick said, look, you're spending a lot of money every year trying to get rid of the pine trees off Rangitoto. Why don't you stop the seed source? So there was 1, 2, 3 areas where the pine trees were on the Rangitoto end of Motutapu, and he said you should get rid of the seed source, and that's what we did.
That's now, extremely sensible.
So we cut one lot down because they were right next to a road, but there were two other places where DOC, who have limited resources, decided that they would drill and fill, but not fell, because you know it's more money, and that is why you see those pine trees right on the edge there, because of the possible infection on Rangitoto.
Thank you for explaining that, it makes perfect sense. Just before we go, there are fortnightly volunteer days, is that right, on Motutapu? So if Waiheke people wanted to get involved, either by taking their own boat or taking a ferry back to Auckland and then catching the volunteer boat back to Motutapu, I understand that there are certain conditions you have to meet before you can join that volunteer group, but would it be fair to say you have volunteer days every couple of weeks, and if people want to know more, they should go to your website?
That's right. We have a public volunteer day every second Sunday, except public holiday weekends, and the ferry goes round to Home Bay on those days. We also have a midweek program, mostly on a Wednesday, but I do take corporate groups out on other days by arrangement. So if anyone is interested in joining us, we have tree planting in the winter, weed control all year round, and nursery work all year round, And if anyone wants to come, they just need to register at admin@motutapu.org. And then, yeah, they can come out and join us.
How wonderful.
They come by boat, but they do need to register first. So we know
the spectrum. Absolutely. Okay, cool. So go and register on the website, which is, got the URL there for us? Sorry, I haven't written it down. www.motutapu.org, is it?
That's it.
Yeah. So that's wonderful. And you know, we are the kaitiaki out here in the Gulf. Let's get over there, folks, and see what we can do to help the Motutapu Restoration Trust. We had a translocation of bellbirds to Waiheke many years ago, and it didn't work. So let's get them on Motutapu, and then we'll have them over here eventually. Bridget Winstone, thank you so much for your time this morning, and good luck and congratulations on all the hard work you guys have done out there.
Oh, thank you very much, and good luck with your pest-free Waiheke.
Thanks.
Absolute.
We'll do our best.
Magic if you can pull it off.
Yeah, we'll do our best. Thank you, Bridget. All the best.
Okay. Bye.
Bye. Bridget Winstone from the Motutapu Restoration Trust.